Good morning, everyone. We're on page 705, line 1234. We're in the middle of this long response of the voice of the Supreme to Savitri, granting her wish to return to earth with Satyavan, and explaining in the passage which we are reading now, he's explaining what Savitri's victory will mean for the future of the earth, for the huge future of humankind. It's a long prophecy. As it was pointed out last week, this is the longest continuously dictated passage, almost five lines that dictated continuously without a break on successiveness. So first of all, Savitri was told that as long as the ignorance rules, then she and Satyavan will be born again and again in human forms, helping human beings to be to come into touch with the higher consciousness. Okay, start again. At the top of the page 705, we read that when the hour of the divine draws near, the mighty mother shall take birth in time and God be born into the human clay in forms made ready by your human lives. It means no longer human forms, but forms that have been prepared by human evolution. We can think of the coming of the higher race. Then shall the truth supreme be given to men. And at the line 1234, some beings shall be made the glory's receptacles and vehicles of the Eternal's luminous powers. There will be a number of beings who will play those roles. So we'll read on from there. Would you like to start?
Some shall be?
These are the high forerunners, line 1230.
Oh, yes. Okay. These are the high forerunners, the heads of time, the great deliverers of earthbound mind, the high transfigurers of human clay, the firstborn of a new supernal race. The incarnate dual power shall open God's door, eternal supermind touch earthly time. The superman shall wake in mortal man and manifest the hidden demigod, or grow into the godlight and the god force, revealing the secret deity in him. Then shall the earth be touched by the Supreme. His bright unveiled transcendence shall illumine the mind and heart and force the life and act to interpret his inexpressible mystery in a heavenly alphabet of divinity sign.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines from line 1234?
This cave is human body or what?
In the cave. Usually when there's a reference to the cave, it is the cave of the subconscious, where all the treasures are hidden, guarded by the dragon of the dark foundations. No? So when this higher energies come down, those treasures will be revealed, revealing the secret deity in the cave. So he says this work is going to happen.
God light, God force. So mental and pranic.
The light and the power, the dynamic aspect, not consciousness, but active dynamic.
The idea of cows also, cows in the cave, maybe we can have some more detail because he keeps on referring to the cows in the cave and coming and all.
All right. So we are following the legend of Satyavan and Savitri, which Aurobindo has identified as one of the many symbolic myths of the Vedic cycle. So another of those symbolic myths is the story of the cows in the cave. And it's very interesting that this myth is there in Greek mythology and even in Japanese mythology, that the story of how the in Vedic Sanskrit, the word for light, rays of light, and the word for cow is the same. So this is an example of this language, this symbolic language, which has a dual meaning. So when we read about the cows, the cattle of the sun god being stolen by the powers of darkness, the dividers and the misers, this is a symbol of the way in which the light of the higher consciousness has got hidden in the subconscious of the earth. And in the Vedic story, it is a special group of rishis, the Angirasas, who were in search, they were searching for that treasure, that hidden treasure. And they were shown the way by a dog, Sarama, the goddess of intuition, who sniffs out the treasures and shows the rishis the way. So Sarama, she's the goddess of intuition. They found out by intuition that these treasures are hidden in the cave, but they couldn't themselves break into that cave. They had to take help from Lord Indra, the god of mind, of higher mind, and he uttered a great mantra which broke open the cave, so that the treasures could be released. And as a result of that, the heavens opened and all the divine energies came pouring down in the form of... I'm ashamed to be telling this story of Eve, who tells it much more beautifully. But anyway, if you want to add or correct anything, Janine. No. Sorry. So we will find references to this cave and the treasures and the dragon and the cows of the sun god. In the Greek version, it's interesting that these cows are actually stolen by the god of mind, Hermes. He drags their tails backwards into the cave, and that cave is even commemorated in Greece. Everybody knows where that cave is, and Helmut and I have visited it, but it didn't really look like it had ever contained any treasures. It must have been a symbolic cave. And somehow they had to be rescued from there. So is that okay, Narendra? Yes? Earlier, he had spoken, the voice had spoken to Satyavan and Savitri, saying, you are the dual power of God. And he's been explaining how they would be born in human forms and how they would lead humanity, influence humanity. And now he says that when these first forerunners come, the firstborn of a new supernal race, then the incarnate dual power, Savitri and Satyavan, incarnated as the Mighty Mother and the Lord, born in the human clay. They will open God's door, and eternal supermind will touch earthly time. So when we read these lines, we can think about what happened on 29th of February 1956, when the mother had the experience in the playground after the meditation, that she saw herself in a golden form, and she had a huge hammer in her hands, and she was told, "It is time." Hammered on the door, and the door opened, and all the powers of supermind poured down and were swallowed up world. Sri Aurobindo was writing this in 1949, but he seems to have seen this happen. So when that happens, the superman, the next level, the next transitional species, will wake up in mortal man and begin to manifest that hidden demigod, or they will go into the God light, the God consciousness, and the God force, and they will reveal secret deity hidden in the cave. Then shall the earth be touched by the Supreme, and his bright, unveiled transcendence shall illumine the mind and heart, and force the life and act to interpret his inexpressible mystery in a heavenly alphabet of divinity's signs, a kind of code. It's as if all the appearances of this world, all the forms, are signs, no? It forms an alphabet. And if we have that higher light of the unveiled transcendence, our minds and our hearts and our actions will be interpreting the inexpressible mystery of the Supreme in this heavenly alphabet of signs, divinity's signs. We are reading something similar in the Life Divine at the moment. We have to learn to read this alphabet in order to see, to be able to perceive and understand the Lord at work in the world, in us and in everything.
It could be intuition also, like real intuitions, these signs.
I think the intuition reveals the meaning of the signs to us. Intuition is the power of a direct knowledge which can understand. Intuition is one of those higher levels above the spiritual mind. It's not supermind, it's on the way. Yeah. So the process can begin by a greater prevalence of intuition.
And intuition is first in mind, then in
intuition, in a way, is a level of consciousness of its own, and it's at work in us even now, but we don't always recognize it. The body has its own intuitions, no?
The body instruments, body intuitions instruments.
Yes, yes. So sometimes it happens to us that we make a little movement without knowing why we do it, and then we realize, oh, that if we hadn't done that, something bad would have happened. No? We are not aware. So there are mental intuitions and vital and physical intuitions. Our problem with intuition is that we are not always sure that it's reliable. At the moment, we tend to rely on reason, because we can work things out step by step and see that, oh yes, it must be like that. There's a game we used to play with the kids I think they market it under the name of Mastermind. You know, you start with four secret numbers, and by asking questions and getting answers, you have to work out what those numbers are. And if you ask the questions correctly, and if you get the correct answers, you can reach a conclusion which you're absolutely certain about. It has to be like that. No? And then if the person says no, then you say, well, then you must have given me a wrong answer somewhere along the line, because it has to be like that. Right? So in this way, we feel we can rely upon the conclusions of our reason. So in one of his aphorisms, Sri Aurobindo says, we have to transform reason into ordered intuition, so that for us, the intuition becomes a power that we can rely on with the same certainty as we rely on the reason. You like to add something, Larry?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he uses the word force. Mm. Force the life and act.
Yes, we compelled higher power to be so powerful. I think it happens even now. Sometimes we confuse, we receive wrongly darkness, but still something is forcing the world on its way.
I wonder too if the secret deity in the cave could be the psychic being in the cave of the heart. The Superman, I think, would have to have realized the psychic, no?
Yes. Shall we go on?
I have a question about 9, 12, 36. The heads of time.
Hmm.
Has it not to be the heads of the timeless?
You have to think of Sri Aurobindo's symbol. There's a double triangle. One is pointing downwards and one is pointing upwards. And we can think that the upward pointing triangle is the forward movement of evolution. So at the head of the triangle, there's always one or two or three or five or seven people who are leading the forward and upward movement that it suggests to me. Those few, the apex of the triangle. And behind them come more and more and more.
Saptarishis. We were in the bliss garden this morning, I was remembering. They represent the Saptarishis, no?
The seven rishis.
Fountains there.
Okay, we go on. Elke, would you read? Top of page 706.
This living cosmic spirit shall unring, annulling the decree of death and pain, erasing the formulas of the ignorance. With the deep meaning of beauty and plights itself, the being ready for immortality, his regard crossing infinity's mystic waves, bring back to nature her early joy to live, the metered heartbeats of a lost delight, the cry of a forgotten ecstasy, the dance of the first world creating bliss.
Thank you. The supreme here is he, his. So this is what will happen when eternal supermind touches earthly time and the superman wakes up in mortal men. It says, well, then shall the earth be touched by the supreme. So the living cosmic spirit, the universal spirit of the supreme, shall enring, surround the being ready for immortality. Those who have prepared themselves and developed so that they are ready to live in the immortal state. That presence of the supreme for them will annul, will cross out the decree of death and pain and the formulas of the ignorance, which are at present an apparently inevitable character of our human lives. We've been born, we will die, have to suffer pain, and we are finding it very, very difficult to escape from these formulas of the ignorance to become aware of true knowledge. He will do that annulling through the deep, or this is what he will enring the being ready for immortality with, the deep meaning of beauty and the hidden sense or significance of life. The beings will become aware of these deeper meanings in beauty and life. And then it says, his regard, the look, the gaze of the Supreme, crossing the mystic waves of infinity, will bring back to nature, to earthly nature, her early joy to live. He has often in the poem referred to this original delight of nature, the delight of existence, which perhaps has got spoiled as mind has developed. He will bring back to nature her early joy to live. It'll come back to her in the form of the metered heartbeats of a lost delight. Meter. You know, it's this poetic rhythm, the rhythm of the mantra. So the beats, the heartbeats of nature, we resume this rhythm of delight which has been lost. And she will express herself in a cry of ecstasy, an ecstasy that had been forgotten. It'll come back to her. The experience of the dance of the first world-creating bliss. It's another thing that he refers to here and there in the poem. The delight that the Creator felt when he brought the creation into existence. That it was with delight and it's sustained by delight. This is a special characteristic of Sri Aurobindo's vision and teaching, that what keeps the world going is not desire, but delight. Paula, you'll read. 1261, the immanent.
The immanent shall be the witness God, watching on his many-petaled lotus throne, his actionless being and his silent might, ruling earth nature by eternity's law, a thinker waking the inconscient world, an immobile center of many infinitudes in his thousand-pillared temple by times. Then shall the embodied being live as one who is a thought, a will of the divine, a mask or robe of his divinity, an instrument and partner of his force, a point or line drawn in the infinite, a manifest of the imperishable.
Thank you. Or maybe you read the next three lines, sorry.
The supermind shall be his nature's fount, the eternal's truth shall mold his thoughts and acts. The eternal's truth shall be his light and guide.
Thank you. The immanent, the indwelling divine, the divine dwelling in all the beings and forms of the manifestation. So the immanent will be the witness, watching everything. He'll be seated on his many-petaled lotus throne, like maybe it's this chakra here, the thousand-petaled. From there, he'll be watching. His own being is actionless. It's absolutely silent and immobile and still. His power is silent and immobile, but his being and his power will be ruling earth nature by eternity's law. He will also be a thinker, using the power of mind to wake up this world of the inconscious. That presence will be an immobile center of many infinitudes, many, many different kinds of infinities. He's seated there in his thousand pillared temple by time's sea. What a marvelous image. Here in South India, there are many, in the temples, there are many thousand pillared halls. There must be a significance to that. He'll be seated as if on the shore of the ocean of time, watching everything that is happening. That is the immanent, the indwelling divinity. And the embodied being, all the beings, the being ready for immortality, I think, that embodied being will live as one who is a thought, a will of the divine, a mask or a robe of his divinity, an instrument and partner of his force. I think this corresponds exactly to the description that we've been reading of the Gnostic being, the supramentalized being. That embodied being will be a point, a dimensionless point, or a line drawn in the infinite. He will be a manifest expression, manifest in the world of time and space and matter, a manifest of the imperishable, the one who can never die.
But like mask is not very, he will still be a mask, though.
The individual person will be like a mask that the infinite puts on to play a particular role. The mask, actually, it comes from the Greek theater. The mask represents the character. Either a mask or just a covering, a robe, more or less transparent, of the infinite and the eternal.
It's synthetic to remember also when he talks about masks, that the word in Latin for mask is persona.
Mm. Thank you, Tuan.
What is that?
Persona. The Latin word for a mask. We are all masks.
It has become clear. It's not with ignorance, but it is with the role you play as a supramental being.
Yes. The actor, the one, has chosen to express himself in all these different personas. No? And so each of us wears a particular mask or robe on behalf of that one.
Even when he's a supramental being, he'll still be wearing a mask.
As long as he's embodied. The embodied being to play out this drama.
Just as a point of information, since we're talking...
Speak loud enough so everybody...
Just as a point of information, as we're talking about masks, and my knowledge of it has faded away since I left Japan many years ago, in the great classical school of drama called No. The major characters wear masks, while other minor characters are not without masks. That's from about the 15th century.
Actually, the wearing of masks in theater plays in Greece was also done, that the actors usually were not women, but men.
Mm.
And so men could play the women role, but
yes,
wear a women's mask,
mask. And you think of those Greek theatres, you know, they held enormous numbers of people. Everybody in the city would attend the theatre on a special festival. And so the actors, of course, were just small human beings, but they wore special shoes, boots, and then these masks so that they could be seen and identified from the topmost level. So this one, this being, the supermind, shall be the fount, the source of everything that his nature expresses. The eternal's truth shall mold, shape his thoughts and acts. The eternal's truth shall be his light and guide. You wanted to ask something?
I'm wondering, what does he mean by truth?
What does he mean by truth? Well, don't expect me to tell you. No, the source of everything that we can possibly perceive, physical and subtle, the source of the law, the order that rules the manifestation, is the eternals, which expresses itself in so many different ways that we can't formulate it. We can't say this is the truth, but we can feel that there is a truth, there is a supreme reality which is ruling everything. Will that do?
I think we mentioned here before, no? Bring back to nature her early joy to live, that's one truth. No? Her early joy to live, bring back to nature, and the other one is the world creating bliss the first, so that I think there are many truths that we mention it. What is the truth, no? To that we have to learn it again.
The truth as such is only indirectly accessible to our mind.
Basically the root is the law, and unless many
or we can say law, or we can say will, we can say the will of the Supreme. There's a nice place in book two where it gets expressed. Let's see if I can find that place. It's on page 276. Shall I read these lines? But thought nor word can seize eternal truth. The whole world lives in a lonely ray of her sun. In our thinking's close and narrow lamp-lit house, the vanity of our shut mortal mind dreams that the chains of thought have made her ours. But only we play with our own brilliant bonds. Tying her down, it is ourselves we tie. In our hypnosis, by one luminous point, we see not what small figure of her we hold. We feel not her inspiring boundlessness. We share not her immortal liberty. Thus is it even with the seer and sage, for still the human limits the divine. Out of our thoughts we must leap up to sight, breathe her divine, illimitable air, her simple, vast supremacy confess, dare to surrender to her absolute. Then the unmanifest reflects his form in the still mind as in a living glass. A timeless ray descends into our hearts and we are wrapped into eternity. For truth is wider, greater than her form. A thousand icons they have made of her, and find her in the idols they adore, but she remains herself and absolute. Infinite. Infinite, sorry.
Same.
This is like the history of mankind.
Yeah, and wonderful description of the truth.
It comes at the end of this canto about the kingdoms and godheads of the greater mind, different levels of mind. And he said, even at the highest level, people are trying still to formulate.
Yet if a person lives according to their Svadharma, then they can know something of the truth.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So, back.
With a little more illumination, possible on this line that describes the one, the embodied being who is awakened and identified, is now a point or line drawn in the inside.
1272.
When we learn about geometry at school, when we learn about geometry at school, we learn that a point, although we may make a point on a piece of paper and then it could be measured, that's just a representation of something that has no dimension, might have a position, but it doesn't have any dimension. And a line is a succession of points. And if these points and lines are drawn in the infinite, perhaps they don't even have position. Not only they don't, but they're a representation of something that's beyond dimension.
Actually, when you have points, the line is the shortest distance
between two points.
And when you have two points and a line and another point, you start to manifest. And you create. But it starts with a single point. And you put another point, no one should notice. That's how it is. And you build, you draw.
You can start to build when you've got three dimensions.
Infinite time. Infinity.
So that's all I can say, Patricia.
I think about the symbol, because symbols, we're always challenged with that idea of symbol being an abstract thing, but in fact representing a reality.
Yes.
And I find that by, like in the inner chamber and looking at Sri Aurobindo's symbol, I mean, you don't have to be there, but there it's pretty fantastic and pretty, obvious. Mm. But if you go from those points of the triangles, it's really quite a meditation just to. And then that symbol, it leads you beyond to the reality of what it is standing.
That's what a symbol should do, no? It's a representation. That's what a symbol is, no? Of something much more complex, much richer, multidimensional. It's a sign. So it can be a sign of divinity.
Earlier in our meeting today, here it is, I got my finger right on it. Line 1266, the thinker waking the incumbent world in immobile center of many infinitudes. How can there be many infinitudes?
Oh, but there's
infinity.
There's an infinite number of infinities.
I leave it at there. Totally.
But think about poetry. That's a poetry.
Oh, okay. You're betraying it.
Any finite can be extended to infinity.
Yeah. Yes, necessarily. Manohar, would you read on?
Yes. All then shall change. A magic order come, overtopping this mechanical universe. A mighty race shall inhabit the mortal world. On nature's luminous tops, on the spirit's ground, the Superman shall reign as king of life. Make earth almost the maid and peer of heaven, and lead towards God and truth man's ignorant heart, and lift towards Godhead his mortality. A power released from circumscribing bounds, its
height
pushed up beyond death's hungry reach, light stops shall flame with the immortal stones. Light shall invade the darkness of it. Then, in the process of evolving time, all shall be drawn into a single plant. The divine harmony shall be the earth's law. Beauty and joy remold her way to live. Even the body shall remember God. Nature shall draw back from mortality, and spirit's fires shall guide the earth's blind force. Knowledge shall bring into the aspirant thought a high proximity to truth and God. The supermind shall claim the world for light, and fill with love of God enamored heart, and place light's crown on nature's lifted head, and found light's reign on her unshaken days.
Thank you. I don't have anything to say about these lines.
This last two lines gave me a vision of the Mata Mandir crystal I saw this morning. The upper part was illumined with a crescent, and then the ray coming down. And it's like this,
the
what
crown.
It says here. Mm-hmm. That the place light's crown on nature's lifted head, mm-hmm. and found light's reign on her unshaken base. So the bottom of the crystal is supported by Sri Aurobindo's four symbols. Mm-hmm. So that makes it solid. Mm-hmm. So the lower nature can be supported by him, and the rest is the light is coming down the top.
Yeah.
If we can just identify ourselves with the crystal. It's wonderful. The super mind coming down.
This line, nature shall draw back from mortality, and then the body shall remember God.
Two things go together. No?
It's a veil.
Actually, it says, even the body shall remember God, mm-hmm. nature shall draw back from mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's one of the things we notice in the agenda, where mm-hmm. Mother is talking mm-hmm. about the divinization of the cells. No? If the body, the substance of the body, remembers its divinity, then there will be no more need for death. Death is there because the forms need to change. But if the substance is conscious of its divinity, that transmutation can happen without a need for dissolution.
That's the precondition. It's not that something we have to do, it's already there. We just have to remember.
Remember.
Yeah.
And not only the consciousness, remember, the stuff, the substance has to remember.
And then like also the next line, the spirit's fire, so that Sri Aurobindo brings together the spirit and fire, that's fiery. And we often, in our mental understanding, put it in a cool atmosphere. Yeah.
The spirit is full of energy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the sun.
Heat and light, yes. And those fires, they'll be like guiding fires. It will guide in the darkness. I remember my childhood in a smoky northern English industrial town in November. The fogs used to come, and they were so thick that you really couldn't see where you were going. And then the municipality used to light fires on the street corners, so that you could somehow, by touching on the wall, and find your way home. Then they passed the Clean Air Act. Fortunately, it doesn't happen anymore. But perhaps in China, they have some experiences like that. So fires can be guiding light. No, that's the point I wanted to make. And it's not only that the supermind claims the world for life, it also thrills the heart. The heart will fall in love, the enamored heart will be filled with love of God. light, the divine light, will be the crown of nature, and light will be reigning even in her unshaking base, even in the matter. Mihong?
A greater truth than us shall rule in us and shed its light on the world of mind. A power in our lover shall be a thought, a seeing, presence, govern life and act. In earthly heart kindled the immortal's fire. A soul shall wake in the unconscious house. The mind shall regard the visions heaven of good, the body intuition's instrument, and the life a channel for God's visible power. All earth shall be a spirit's manifest home, hidden no more by the body and the life, hidden no more by the mind's ignorance. An unerring hand shall shape, event, and act. The spirit's eyes shall look through nature's eyes. The spirit's force shall occupy nature's force. This world shall be God's visible garden house. The earth shall be a field and camp of God. Man shall forget consent to mortality, and his embodied frail impermanence.
Thank you. This world shall be God's visible garden house. What did you want to ask them?
All of this huge graves and so on, this earth is the only place where all of this is going to happen. We are singular. There's nothing like this. He's giving earth not a place to escape from, as in, let's say, the world.
He doesn't always mean this planet. In the Indian tradition, earth is the material principle. So sometimes when he says earth, it means the whole material universe.
The psychic exists only on this earth, isn't it? In the whole universe, I think Mother said. The psychic being, the spirit of progress, the psychic being can be found only on the earth.
Well, Mother has spoken about there being special concentrations. So if I've understood rightly, it concords with what Patty has said, that the earth in the whole material universe, it's like a special location where this evolution through psychic being is going on. And on the earth, so the earth is a special concentration in the material universe of this particular work. And on the earth, she says, India is the country where there's a special concentration. That's where it's going on most intensely, has gone on and is going on.
Maybe science may discover some other, till our knowledge goes, there's no human being otherwise. There may be some places or universes.
No, there definitely. And there are not only the material worlds. We the scientists explore this material universe. But pervading all this material universe, there are all the subtle worlds. But the difference between the subtle worlds and the material world is that the subtle worlds are typal worlds. There's no evolution. We are told that there's no evolution going on there.
Through us.
Evolution happens in the material universe. Yes,
and I
Lord,
think science... Oh, excuse me.
From the United States and originally, and I come from the United States and the Native Americans. I had an opportunity to talk with a spiritual leader who's since died, named Yahya. And the earth is the mother. Everybody, the earth is the mother, and then there's father, son. So that seems sort of universal in somehow. She can't grow without the sun. I don't know about the water and all this, but
yes,
for sure.
There's always this idea of the heaven, which is the father, and the earth, who's the mother. And that's reflected in the Indian tradition with this idea of male and female, that there's the one who emanates from himself, his force, the mother. His conscious force is the mother who gives birth to the forms of the earth. We just had Pongal, no? This Tamil festival, its inner meaning is to express gratitude to the sun and to the earth, no? Because together these two give birth to everything.
So the father principle is the spirit and the soul also, is the fire. Mm-hmm. But the mother is what blossoms and all that, so that's why we call her Mother Nature.
Yes.
So for God's sake, why should we destroy her?
Yes, we're treating her very badly.
But I wanted to say one other thing to you about the science. I think science has now come to conclusion. It's not healthy to go out from Mother Earth. The astronauts are telling
yes.
that their bodies are deteriorating and all that.
Really?
They don't find it healthy to go, so the space program is diminishing.
No, but what I meant was there may be more evolved people than humans somewhere else.
That's dreaming, because they're trying to escape the mess they made of Earth.
They may be thinking that.
Yes.
The universe.
All these possibilities are there, and surely there are other universes. We are not the only one. But it's our job to work here. It's not much use thinking about all those other things. We have to work here. Yes?
If there is a divine harmony, the sentence is that
yes.
divine harmony shall be Earth's law. If there is a divine harmony, it's line 12, 9.
Yeah, yes.
What is meant by shall be Earth's law? Because if there is a harmony, it's an existence.
At the moment, there is a harmony, of course. But somehow we all experience that this harmony could be more harmonious. There's, in this teaching, we're told that this harmony is imperfect because of the influence of unconsciousness, the inconscience. That means the earlier stages of evolution that are closer to the apparent inconscience of matter. But from the very beginning of this material universe, the possibility for this emergence of consciousness must have been there. No? I've heard a physicist arguing this recently. No, it's obvious that matter is neither created nor destroyed. Matter and energy are equivalent. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. So these higher forms of energy, we think of them as higher, such as life and thought, the potentiality must have been there from the very beginning. And since those things have evolved, why should we think that the process is finished? We can imagine higher and more perfect forms of harmony. So that seems to be an indication that these things will also evolve in time. That is what Shobindo tells us, you know, that there's higher harmonies to come.
How do we realize?
Well, actually, evolution. No, but evolution will do it for us, but we have, since we're human beings, we have a certain degree of choice. We could choose to collaborate.
Isn't it the principle of life, of maybe the divine life, to collaborate?
Yes. The more divine we become, the more we'll be able to collaborate. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the richer the diversity will become. Mm-hmm. Everything will become more and more uniquely itself. But the order, the law of harmony will become stronger. At the moment, we grow, we progress individually, largely by conflict. by strife and through suffering. But Sri Aurobindo tells us that as we evolve further, it won't need to be like that. I was just reading it yesterday. There's a chapter in The Life Divine called, what is it called? About incapacity, death and incapacity. Strife, death and incapacity, I think it's called. And he says, at the moment, strife, conflict, is a way for us to progress. But gradually, instead of it becoming this oppositional thing, it'll become more like a sports competition, you know, where the two combatants, wrestlers or tennis players or whatever it is, they test themselves against each other, and in this way they progress. And finally, he says, it'll become the clasp of love. Yes?
Many thoughts, thinking, religions tell us greed and desire is the greatest obstacle to what you have just stated.
What?
Greed and desire.
No, that's the other one. Incapacity, desire and death, or death, desire and incapacity. Because as long as we're incomplete and imperfect, desire is also a way of progressing.
Yes, but we have destroyed a tremendous amount of what is nature through greed and desire.
Well, we needn't take all the responsibility for that, because it's nature working through us, no? And we can even say it's God working through us. Sometimes we wonder, what is he up to? But that's what it is. He says we shouldn't underrate the importance of waste and destruction in the processes of nature. Forests get burned down, and it clears the way for new life to come. So I don't know, at the moment we see so many terrible things going on in the world. We can't see. We can't see where all this is leading. It seems to be catastrophic. But we could have faith that actually, even when all we can see is drift and bale, there is a hand which is holding us and leading us and protecting us.
Ecological destruction is not
there. In his name, the spirit's force, they occupy nature's force.
Yes, spirit's force will occupy nature's force, yes.
Coming back to desire, you also say it's required. I mean, for your progression, you also require desire for higher evolution. It's not all a bad thing. What you desire really is...
Eventually, it will become something else.
Yes. Come out of inconsciousness.
In our present state, it's... Mm-hmm. It's desire, and we can see that, oh, the push to fulfill all our desires may not be the best thing for our progress. But on the other hand, just this rejection of this dynamic life force is also not a good thing.
Yes, Arjuna believes Krishna guided Arjuna against that lack of desire.
Yes, Larry.
I think a good metaphor too, it's like this kind of orchestra playing, and where each instruments and imperfect instruments and unpracticed instruments, and when you become, each of us become sort of more our true self, then you'll have a greater harmony.
The symphony will sound nicer, yes, for sure. Yeah.
Here we are, how many nationalities raised in this room right here, with representing some nature of where we came from.
Yes.
Expression. And this is the kind of miracle of Oroville to produce this, and people are coming.
Yes.
The urge, the suffering, the urge of something else is becoming more and more.
I think it's a kind of magnet. So the beings who are ready get attracted by the magnet, and then something happens, whether we are conscious of it or not.
There's a moment I see it And so many people come from every country. It's like the birds. They have to come and go to the from the north to the south.
So, but it's the souls that are attracted. Mm-hmm. But we come for all kinds of reasons. No? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think when the modern mind shifts from the habit of complaining and criticizing when it encounters something it doesn't like, to Mother's principle of harmony. She said, whatever leads to harmony makes me happy. Mm-hmm. So you asked, what is the way to harmony? Because I can't forget that message to the lake. It is only in harmonious collaboration that effective work can be done. So those two words, harmonious collaboration. Mm-hmm. So Larry is the editor of collaboration. So that's such a prominent...
Yes.
And then we'll stop all this infighting and all the other things.
But it's difficult for us, you know.
Only it's a shift of the mind. President yeah. Obama said hearts must change. So Shimino yeah. says the same thing.
We were reading in The Life Divine. It's the ego, no? It's so yeah, exactly. When the ego begins to dissolve and the soul comes forward, then this harmonious collaboration becomes natural instead of having to make an effort for it. No? And otherwise, we just can't even see that it's needed. There's this instinctive feeling that we have to make our way, our ideas or our wishes prevail.
Hmm? Yes, if I may just say, last night we saw a film on MS Dhoni. Probably most of you know who he was, the famous cricketer of India. Well, this man was from Bihar, and in rather poor circumstances he grew up. And his father was concerned about him going to school and passing exams so he could get a decent job to make a living. But of course, he had such a way of being so respectful to his father and being patient. And he even went to work for the railway for several years to appease his father. And then just the day came, he said, I can't do this anymore. I'm a cricketer, I have to go. So in that way, he was able to keep peace with his father and then fulfill his aspirations also. Mm-hmm. If the world could see that through patience, understanding, right action, a harmony can be kept. And then he became one of the most famous cricketers of all time. So there you have it, no? It's in life. People are doing it. The few people know how to do this thing.
It's something quite dominant in Indian culture, I think.
Yes, mm-hmm. And you can see it on his face. I didn't know anything about cricket. When I saw that man playing the World Cup, I thought there's something special about that person. Who is he? And now I know who he was. He's quite interesting.
Shall we stop there for today? We can hear Mother reading some of these passages.
Very an infinite to an absolute power. The spirit's mightiness shall cast off its mouth. Its greatness shall be fed, shaping the world's form. It shall be seen in its own veilless beam, a star rising from the inconscient night, a sun climbing the supernatures, all then shall change, a magic order come, overtopping this mechanical universe, a mightier race shall inhabit the mortal world. On nature's luminous top, on the spirit's ground, the superman shall reign as but first, high truth must set her feet on earth, and man, as far to the eternal flight, and all his members feel the spirit's touch, and all his life obey an inner force. This too shall be, so a new life shall come. Nature shall live to manifest secret to God. The spirit shall take up the human plane, this earthly life
Dr. Sherpentor.